This is the son of PCJ. Shortwave listening, to many the final frontier. These are the voyages of PCJ Radio's Media Network Plus. Its continuing mission to track down strange news signals and to seek out news stations and radio personalities and to boldly go where many men have gone before.
Well, hello everyone and welcome to the show. Today we'll be talking about DRM or Digital Radio Mondiale. More than 10 years ago, people were saying this was the future. But it seems DRM has not really done much in the way of replacing traditional analog shortwave. Keith will tell us a bit more on what he thinks the future will hold. We'll also announce the winner of the Vintage Radio Netherlands pennant, and Dan Hensley will join us for a look at propagation. Media Network Plus, the show that Marconi would never have dreamed of. First, here's Keith with a look at some of the headlines from the world of media.
China's state media organization, Xinhua News Agency, has released a mobile news application in Spanish called Xinhua Movi. Xinhua Movi is specially designed for Spanish speakers to take full advantage of Xinhua's real-time multimedia content. It provides an all-exclusive access to the wide range of news and information in text, photo, and video forms. Global users can download this application for free from both the Apple and Android app stores. The application is the third of its kind that Xinhua operates, following the Chinese and English versions. Last week, Radio Netherlands Worldwide broadcast their final Dutch program in a 24-hour marathon that looked back at some of the most important highlights since the service went on air. Jonathan Gruber of RNW's The State We're In told me the mood was that of a party and a funeral at the same time.
If you just walked in here and you didn't know what this was all about, you'd think that it was some kind of mega party going on because there's a big old tent. There's things floating around in the in this nice sort of like pool that we have a big pool out there. I'm watching through the window. I'm seeing giant stacks of speakers floating around on the pool, and I'm hoping they don't fall in because that would really be an expensive mistake. But there's live music and there's lots of drinks going around and there's hordes of people walking through the buildings and there's lots of smiles on people's faces. But then when I start speaking with people, like I have a somebody who works on my show is Dutch, and she just worked on one of the she was directing one of the hours of the broadcast, and she came back and she just looked really, really sad. And you know, we all asked her what's up, and she said, Oh, the mood down there is really melancholy. So, yeah, I think there is a tremendous sense of loss.
A reporter from Radio Liberty was assaulted while doing her job. Elena Chilgayan says that a group of young men outside the Urbuni polling station attacked her as she was taking pictures. She claims that the youth hit her and snatched her camera after it fell during a scuffle. The reporter had informed police, who told her they would most likely launch a criminal investigation. And finally, UK-based TalkSport, the world's biggest radio station, announced plans for its expansion into Europe. They made the announcement to public and commercial broadcasters from across Asia at the Radio Asia 2012 in Jakarta. The announcement follows TalkSport's recent agreement to become the official global partner of Barclays Premier League for the next four football seasons. With a growing audience in Singapore, Malaysia, China, and India, they expect to see a rise in audience of around 63% globally. If you would like more information on these and other stories of what's going around in the media, I invite you to check out the Kim Andrew Elliott blog, which you can find a link for at our own website, www.pcjmedia.com, and you'll find a link at the bottom of the page.
Call the PCJ answer line at country code 44-20-3286-1399. That's country code 44-20-3286-1399, and leave your comments and questions. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is PCJ Radio.
And you're listening to Media Network Plus on PCJ Radio. DRM, or Digital Radio Mondiale, was supposed to be the way of the future for international broadcasting. But since the days that DRM was first created, many other new platforms have come along. Platforms like mobile phone apps, internet radio, and more now making accessing radio easier and more versatile than ever before. So, what is the future of DRM? Is there a future for DRM? Well, Keith will join us to give us his insights and gaze into his crystal ball for the answer to that question.
DRM, like you just said, stands for Digital Radio Mondiale. And essentially what it is to send a very high-quality digital signal over, let's say, traditional mediums. Let's take shortwave or AM radio. So embedded into the shortwave signal would be a lot of ones and zeros, like with other digital technology. And you'd have a special radio that you can use to receive the program. Now, because the information is sent digitally, you don't have to deal with fading problems or static or anything like that. So it does offer a much better signal. Now, what I've done to illustrate this for people who don't know and are not exactly sure what that means. Well, let's take a listen to this. Now, we're going to listen to two clips. The first clip is taken off of traditional shortwave radio.
Bienvenue, vous êtes à l'écoute du programme test du projet DRM, Digital Radio Mondiale, autrement dit la Radio Mondiale Numérique.
All right, Paulette. Well, that, of course, was traditional shortwave radio. You've probably heard something like that before, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, imagine taking that, and making that not just a digital signal, but providing the data that would make the audio digitally and broadcasting it off shortwave. And this is how it would sound.
Bienvenue, vous êtes à l'écoute du programme test du projet DRM, Digital Radio Mondiale, autrement dit la Radio Mondiale Numérique.
Wow, Keith, that really sounded great.
Well, exactly.
What a difference.
There is a huge difference. So imagine what this would mean for international broadcasters like the Voice of America, BBC World Service, if they can use this medium. Imagine it. Just imagine it. You're at home in Vancouver. You're tuning to the BBC World Service, broadcasting a live classical concert from Albert Hall, or listening to a concert from the Concertgebouw in Amsterdam, or some jazz, you know, coming from some other club around the world, or anything. It is absolutely amazing. It is an amazing, amazing technology.
So how does it work? I mean, you're going to need these special receivers, but so that's going to impact the shortwave listeners, people that just have regular analog shortwave now. But does that mean someone like me in Vancouver, it's a little tough to get shortwave? I guess for anyone around the world, it's tricky. You have to be at a certain time and the frequencies change. Is it going to make it easier then for people to catch shortwave broadcasts than it is now? Like, how does it all work?
Well, how it all works, like I said, instead of just transmitting, let's say, audio in the form of waves, it transmits ones and zeros. The same way that your smartphone would work if you're connected up to a G3 network or you're receiving digital TV signals.
But you have to be connected.
You have to have, yeah, you have to have the right radio for it. I mean, if you have a traditional shortwave radio, you won't hear anything at all. Now, there are some advantages and disadvantages with DRM. Now, the clip that we just took listen to is DRM at its full advantage, using a really high bit rate and giving an excellent, excellent sound. Now, of course, that is a bit rate that I think most broadcasters wouldn't use because it uses a lot of bandwidth. But you can lower that and still get a very, very high quality signal. Now, that's the advantage of it. The sound is absolutely amazing. The disadvantage is almost like it is with any other digital technology out there. If we take, let's say, as an example, digital television. Now, in many parts of the world, Canada, the United States, and other countries, they've made the switch from analog TV to digital TV. And people, if they didn't have a digital TV converter built in their TV, had to go and buy a special box to receive the signals. The problem, though, and this is not, this happened in quite a few countries, is, okay, they go, they invest the money, they buy the special digital converter, and guess what? Their TV still doesn't get anything. Because unlike with analog, even if the signal is weak or poor, you can still manage to pull it in. With digital, it's there or it isn't. So it's like, you know, in areas along the Canadian-US border, there was a time, you know, you could live on the Canadian side. And if you had a pair of rabbit ears or an antenna outside your house, you point it towards the United States, and you can pick up a TV station from the United States. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the picture may not be perfect, but you can still see it, and it was still watchable. With digital technology, the signal is, it's either there or it isn't there. Now, the DRM radio that I played with, I was able to pick up the signal, for example, from All India Radio on 15050 kilohertz. The problem was the signal wasn't strong enough to provide any audio. So on the display, it said that I tuned to All India Radio, but the signal was not strong enough to take all those ones and zeros and make it into an audio format. It just wasn't possible. So that is one of the disadvantages.
So then, is it going to be a boost for international broadcasters?
You know, that is a $64,000 question. And a lot of people are now wondering if it's too little, too late. And what I mean by that, you, along with many other people, will remember a time in the 1970s and 80s when there was the format wars going on between Beta and VHS. Now, Beta, right, Paulette, was a far superior system in, mm-hmm, sound and video. It was far superior.
I remember it, yeah.
The problem was Sony, who developed the technology, at the beginning, didn't license it to other manufacturers. They held on to it. So if you wanted Beta, you had to buy a Sony machine.
And they were very expensive, too. The Sony Betamax were far more expensive than the VHS. Everyone knew the quality difference, but the price difference really made a difference.
Exactly. You know, I still remember how much I paid for my Beta machine, and it was over $400. And when the JVC came out with their VHS format, I bought one for less than $200. So right. JVC came out with the VHS format, which was inferior, not just visually, but in audio quality as well, and said, you know what, to all the other manufacturers here, Panasonic, you, RCA, whoever else, license it from us. You can make the machines as many as you want. And guess what? They won the war. Eventually, Sony decided to let other companies manufacture Beta machines. Sony made one, Panasonic. But you know what happened? It was too little, too late. And this is something, you know, Paulette, that we've seen in technology happen time and time again.
Now, Digital Radio Mondiale is not a company. It's a non-profit organization. So who are some of the broadcasters involved?
Some of them would include, let's say, Vatican Radio, Radio Netherlands, Deutsche Welle, Radio Canada International. There's also, of course, a lot of manufacturers that are involved. Continental Electronics, which is one of the leading shortwave transmitter manufacturers in the United States. Organizations like Babcock that do all the distribution for the BBC World Service, and many, many others. These are some of the groups that make up the members of the DRM consortium. So it's not like, you know, small broadcasters and small companies. You're talking about big players here.
But it still sounds like sort of a professional association that was created before the profession was established. What are some of the problems with DRM then in terms of technical and also just practical, the way it was managed?
Well, some of the problems are, you know what? It's great to broadcast in DRM, Paulette. You can have many, many hours. You can put 24 hours a day, every station. But if there's no receivers on the market, who's going to listen? This has been the big problem for a long time. It's sort of a chicken and the egg effect. And what has been happening, let's say, over the last 5 or 6 years, is some broadcasters, like the Voice of America, for example, that was part of the consortium, they pulled out. Hmm. One of the reasons they pulled out was they were changing their mandate themselves, but also because there are no receivers. The receivers that are on the market are very expensive. You're talking at over $140. Now, you can buy a pretty decent shortwave radio for under $50 and have no problem tuning in stations. But with DRM, imagine this, you spend $140, $300, and you're limited to like 5 or 6 broadcasters. It doesn't make any sense. So, you know, it's like if the receivers had come out a lot sooner in mass production, we would probably be in a different situation right now. If DRM had said, let's say, to manufacturers in China, because let's face it, China is probably one of the only few places in the world where if you say, I need 1 million of something, they can do it at the drop of a hat.
Right.
If they had sent, you know, two manufacturers in China, look, we want a DM radio. We want millions of them out on the market by this date. The situation would be different, but that never happened. When DRM, you know, a few years ago, there was a lot more DRM programming than there is now, but broadcasters have started cutting it back. Some broadcasters have now cut back to the point where they don't see it as an option for listeners. They use it as a way to distribute their programs. For example, Radio New Zealand International, that has a number of FM relays in the Pacific, they're using DRM to send the signal to the relays and then are rebroadcasting that signal on FM because it's a lot more economical than using satellite.
Now, you mentioned that there are receivers on the market, but just not very many.
Well, Paulette, all the receivers and DRM equipment that you can use, your laptop to receive DRM radio, you can only buy it online. So if you go to any major electronics chain anywhere in the world and say, I want to buy a DRM receiver, forget it.
Really? That's not in any retail outlets anywhere?
I haven't seen any in any retail outlets. Most of them are available online. There is, I think, one in the United States called Universal Radio that was carrying a model from UniWave. I'm not even sure that radio is still being made now. You know, so it's like, where can you get the equipment? Where can you get the equipment? If I want to, at this moment, I can walk out of this door, head outside, find a shop, a number of shops where I know I can buy a shortwave radio at the drop of a hat. For a DRM radio, forget it. Now, one of the other problems that DRM radios have, and this is something that I've heard not just from people that have owned them, but also from people that work within the broadcast industry, is number one, okay, make the radios cheap and affordable so they can be distributed to areas of the world where people cannot afford a $140 or $200 radio. But if you're going to do that, well, maybe you should make it operate on batteries because chances are maybe their electricity is not stable.
Or solar.
Yeah, exactly. But the problem with these radios, they consume so much power. The battery life in these radios, the ones that have batteries in them, is appalling. appalling.
So even though it costs less to transmit DRM, the difference is made up in the receiving. So there's really no energy savings, is there? Or it's iffy if there is.
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, if you broadcast in DRM, let's take Radio Australia for example. If Radio Australia wants to reach Papua New Guinea on shortwave, which they do, they use a 100 kilowatt transmitter. They have usually one or two on the air at one time, broadcasting just to Papua New Guinea. They also have a DRM transmission that goes out that's only using 40 kilowatts. So you can actually get a much better signal using a lot less power. But you know what? There's no point to do it if you cannot buy a radio.
Well, right.
It's like, you know, yeah. It's like, for example, Paulette, let's say one day you want to go and buy a new barbecue, right? You buy a barbecue, and guess what? You can't buy a gas tank for it, and you cannot buy charcoal. You just have the barbecue.
It's pretty useless, like a car with no gas in it.
A car with no gas in it, exactly, or a car with no engine, you know? It's completely, completely silly. So I think a lot of people now are wondering, is it too little, too late? And, you know, even though I love the technology, I really do, and I support it, I'm starting to begin to wonder myself if it really is too late.
So are you going to shine up that crystal ball then and have a look and see is the possibilities?
It would be very sad if DRM was to stop completely. I think what has to get done is DRM as a group, their consortium, need to get together and decide once and for all, are we going to do this or are we still going to promote it, but have no receivers available on the market? Somebody needs to come forward and say, you know what, we need to have a radio that costs less than $50 that we can sell anywhere that is affordable. And, you know, at the same time, they have to push other broadcasters to say, you know what, yes, we know you have budget cuts, but look, we do have this format now. The receivers are out on the market. You know, if there were millions and millions of DRM receivers out there, I think shortwave broadcasters probably would cut back on analog shortwave, but would possibly continue on DRM. But, you know, why continue on either of them if there is no receiver available on the market that is affordable? If I look, for example, and I'm pulling it up as I'm talking to you right now, the broadcast to, let's say, North America on DRM, it is tiny. It's only a few hours. So you know what? Why? Well, there's no receiver, so why should we broadcast in that format? And is DRM going to be around in 10 years? Personally, I don't think it will be. But, you know, who knows what can happen?
Last week, we told you about one original Radio Netherlands pennant from the late 1960s and 70s that we are giving away. And the winner is Dmitry Mazin in Russia. Congratulations, Dmitry, and we'll be contacting you to double-check your address. Now, time for propagation and what we can expect over the next 7 days. Here's Dan Hensley.
The 10.7-centimeter flux will be 120 on May 19th. And then from May 20th to May 22nd, we'll see a 10.7-centimeter flux of 125. On May 23rd, a 10.7-centimeter flux of 120. And then on May 24th and 25th, a 10.7-centimeter flux of 115. The A index will be 5 on May 19th and 20th. On May 21st, we will see an A index of 8. The A index then spikes at 15 on May 22nd. On May 23rd, it drops down to 8, continuing to drop down to 5 on May 24th and 25th. The KP index will be 2 on May 19th and 20th, followed by a KP index of 3 from May 21st to May 23rd, 2012. On May 24th and 25th, the KP index stabilizes at 2. 7 new sunspots are in view on the solar disk this week, with one passing out of view. Sunspots 1477, 78, 79, 81, 82, 84, and 85 are the new sunspots in view, and 1476 is the one passing out of view and continues to decay. Solar activity is currently low. SpaceWeather.com says the following. A radiation storm is underway as energetic solar protons are swirling around Earth following an M5-class solar flare from departing sunspot 1476. The sunspot erupted on May 17th around 0130 UT. This radiation storm ranks S2 on NOAA storm scales, which means it is a moderate event capable of confusing spacecraft imaging systems and causing single-event upsets in orbiting electronics. No coronal holes are present at this time. And on Sunday, May 20th, the moon will pass in front of the sun, producing an annular solar eclipse visible across the Pacific side of the Earth. This path of annularity, where the sun will appear to be a ring of fire, stretches from China and Japan to the middle of North America. In the United States, the eclipse begins at 5:30 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time and lasts for 2 hours. Maximum coverage is around 6:30 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time.
Thanks, Dan. And with that, we've come to the end of our program. If you'd like to get in touch with us between programs, just drop us an email. We'd love to hear from you. The address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. Once again, that is mnp@pcjmedia.com. As well, if you'd like to listen to this show again or past editions of Media Network Plus, just go to our website, www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus, and you'll find podcasts of our show there. And do join us on Facebook. All you have to do is sign in and do a search for PCJ Media or PCJ Radio. So on behalf of Keith Perron and Dan Hensley, this is Paulette McQuarrie from Vancouver, Canada, saying so long and see you soon.
Someday, one day.
What you're thinking, if you believe.